All people want to have a better standard of living. Social amenities, material infrastructure, relationships that provide them with a pleasant life. But is this ultimately achievable? Can we live in a society having true contact with ourselves, our fellow citizens, to live in harmony with our inner home and our planet? And if we can, how can this happen? Many people search for this kind of harmony in eco-villages. I'm Katerina Badzaiki, and in today's Infinite Curious program of Earth's Voice of Greece, we will talk about the value of eco-communities. Eco-villages are small, self-sufficient communities that live from and for their natural surroundings. There are more than 10,000 eco-villages in the world, mainly in rural areas where their inhabitants build societies based on cooperation, self-sufficiency, renewable energies, and ecological materials. In Greece alone, there are more than 15 eco-villages and collectivities dating back as far as 1997. Perhaps not the oldest one, Aifaron was created in 2006 and is a sustainable settlement, an eco-community of 60 people located near the village of ancient Nemea in Greece. They call their collectivity a university of life, a place where every human being is empowered to realize the efzin, the good life. The residents in this community use regenerative agriculture as a base to live in harmony with nature. On their open day in Athens, I met the president of Aifaron, Mark Hafferman, who is from Germany, and I started by asking him, how did their eco journey begin?
The first thing that we did was filling up an Opel Corsa and driving from Athens to Nemea with 100 trees in the trunk and starting planting trees day and night. This was the very beginning, because we said a tree needs a couple of years or even decades to grow in order to bear fruits. And in a similar approach, we approach also human beings, because a human being has a, let's say, a higher nature and a lower nature, and it needs to be cultivated in order to reap the fruits, the talents of each and everybody.
Mm-hmm. Why? What was that that made you actually bring those 100 trees to plant them in that particular area? What was the vision behind that?
In ancient times, Nemea, in ancient Greek, it means nemeo, means to give, to share. So in ancient times, the athletes, the Olympic athletes, came to Nemea in order to train, to prepare themselves for the Olympic Games. And the wise guys back in those days, they always said, come here, do your training here in order for you to be successful and be a winner in the games. Similar nowadays, we see the Olympic Games in everyday life out in the world. So we retreat for some time, recharge ourselves with pure energy, with the best energy that we can get, in order to go back out into the world, to come back to the place, to go back out. It's like a breathing, inhale, exhale.
Why is an eco-community so important for human beings?
I feel that, for example, my parents or grandparents, they still were living in touch with nature. Everybody at his house, they were living in villages, they had a couple of animals, a small garden, they had some field work, and the hand labor for the human being is very important, because it's grounding him, it's giving him a therapy from a very, very natural basis on. Without taking any specific supplements or medicine, just by being out in nature, by being surrounded with green colors, which is the most prominent color in nature, the eye, and hence the whole human being, is being set under therapy. So by living in an eco-community, we close again the cycle of a holistic lifestyle, where you both cultivate the earth, and you live together as a collective.
Mm-hmm. Is living in an eco-community a sort of road to happiness, living together with other people, I mean?
It is a road to happiness if you base it on certain criteria and principles. If there's no core principle set and a code of conduct or a code of how to communicate to each other when problems start to come up, because if you have so many different people from so many different backgrounds, I mean, we see it in a small family, that there can be conflict, right? So if you don't have any recipe to handle the conflict, then the eco-community sooner or later is bound to fail. So we invested a lot of time, almost most of the time, in human relationships to really be able to understand the other person in Greek, they say afugrasma. So I really tune myself into the other person's mindset, feeling, background. How is his view on things? And how can I improve myself? If I see a behavior, we call it mirroring. If I see behavior in another person that I don't like and that triggers me in some point or another, I am invited to look into myself and to see how I am doing the exact same behavior, maybe in another plane, on another level, or with other people. The way we take decisions is very simple. We have a board of directors, which is being voted for every 2 years. And everyone has the right to be voted and also to step back if they don't want to be voted for. And these guys basically represent the whole community. However, they are also being checked by everyone else. So it doesn't mean we don't stick to roles or titles. Even if you are in a position of lead, as Plato used to say, the highest man in the state shall be the first servant of the people. Like, and so it tends that those people who have bigger responsibilities, also in decision making, they are serving the community the most. The decisions are being made in general assembly meetings, where the board of directors presents a proposal or one or two alternatives. And if the assembly meeting doesn't approve the proposals that are given, then they are invited, first of all, to set a counter proposal. And then the board of directors needs to come back again and readdress the issue. We believe that there are no mistakes, because even if a mistake, let's say, happens, it is for a beneficial outcome. Most of the times when we roll out a project and one takes the decision and the others don't approve, or on the flip side, if everybody approves and one doesn't approve, and we see that at some point in time in the implementation of the project something goes bad, in the long term, when we look back at the so-called mistake, we see that it was actually for our benefit as a learning step. So every obstacle, every mistake becomes a stepping stone to really evolve ourselves and to outgrow our pains and our threats or our misconceptions and limitations also.
Mm-hmm. What is the fruit of your decision-making?
The fruit of the decision-making, first of all, is that the people live in harmony. We have created a very, very nice atmosphere of brotherhood, of sisterhood, of people really being able to collaborate together. This wasn't the case in the beginning. People were fighting, shouting in the beginning. And this, for me, is already the biggest success, even if it doesn't go outside, because we have been sort of a community limited with some people coming every now and then, traveling from Athens to Nemea over the weekend, helping out, giving a hand. I came from Germany I invested all my holidays first to come down and really cultivate the land together with the guys. And
what do you do there, actually? So you cultivate the land, people come and go, other people who actually live there on a permanent basis.
We have certain installments, but most of us live in Athens and we come for the weekend and we take shifts. Mm-hmm. So for example, for those who take care of the watering of the plants, because this is something that you need to do almost every day, right? And some other also vegetable cultivation. We have some fields that we harvest also other crops or olives and vineyards. We take shifts and we have a work schedule, let's say.
Those who live on a permanent basis, where do they stay?
In caravans.
Mainly caravans, no tents there?
Some tents during the summer, but in the winter it gets cold, so it's more mobile setup.
But you're one of the few communities, actually, that you have also alternative forms of energy, if I understand correctly. So these caravans, they need electricity, they need a way to work. How do they work?
And not all the caravans are connected to the grid. We are off-grid. We produce our energy through solar panels. And we're now expanding to other forms of alternative energy, like wind energy. Water energy is not possible because we invest a lot of energy in order to get water out of the soil, because it's quite a dry land. But nonetheless, it has a good feeling that you're completely autonomous, or at least you're trying your best to get there.
I was watching a documentary about this guy you have there, Mr. Kalogeraikis, if I'm not mistaken,
yes.
who can actually operate his car just with water and tsipuro.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? How does this work?
Yes, he can drive a certain kilometers with this new mix. And I mean, he's an inventor, right? He basically set up his own house fully autonomous. And now he has entered into mobility. And he also wanted to fix heater systems for houses so that they can also be heated with tsipuro.
Really? How does this go about?
It's a enopnevma.
Spirit. Is it working? Is it actually working?
His car is working, yeah. We haven't rolled it out because it's quite... you need to take care of a lot of things, right? So,
but apart from his car, does this apply to other
devices? Yet. Not yet, no.
No, not yet. Okay.
I mean, he's a crazy guy who has these ideas and is really thinking ahead. But we haven't installed any other things.
What do you cultivate? And I understand you also do sessions about aromatherapy mm-hmm. and different kinds of herbs and spices. Speaking about a healthy lifestyle, do you consume the things you produce, or do you actually also sell the things you produce? And how do you make sure that you sustain, the community you actually live in? I mean, also financially, because I
yes.
understand that it's a task, it's an enormous task which you have undertaken, right?
The financial sustainment is up to now done by the members themselves through donations and through member fees that we give. And we do provide our biological products to our members also within Athens. And we haven't achieved 100% autonomy yet with food, but it's our goal, because sometimes you need to cultivate a lot of crops of the same kind, tomatoes or vegetables or any kind, in order to really have all year around, or let's say all summer season around, also for your own consumption. However, the approach is that when you plant something, you take care of the plant, you water the plant, you cut the plant or you reap the fruit, then you have an inbuilt respect and gratitude towards that what you're actually consuming afterwards on your plate. And you tend to have a lot less waste. You tend to respect food in a very loving and kind way. And also those who cook, they need to be in a really good state. No one is allowed to be in the kitchen who has a bad day, because all this energy is being transferred onto the plate, onto the food that people eat.
Are you predominantly vegan, I understand, right?
Yes, but not necessarily. Like people eat meat. I mean, in Greece, with so many nice dishes, it's difficult to just stick to vegetables.
No, I mean, because most communities also have been in Evia, and a lot of communities, they do try sort of to protect animals and not eat meat as much as they can.
Yes.
Is this also a common denominator for you there in your community?
Well, we believe in miden agan, let's say everything in balance and nothing in excess. Hence, also the meat consumption is... on a very, very... Compared to my previous life, we eat maybe once or twice a month meat and fish. And if we do so, we also do it in a very conscious way. So not in the consumption way where you take, it's cheap meat mm-hmm. and I'll just shove it in. And most of the people are vegetarians, but it's not obligatory. So we don't give any... rules out, you have to eat this or that. Everyone is responsible for his own diet, and whatever is inspiring him for him, that he follows.
What do you think contributes to a healthy diet in your view? What do you consume on a daily basis? And I understand you live there on a permanent basis, right?
Yes. Well, the diet starts, first of all, as the brain gives the commando to muscles and bones, which are more on the material plane, so a more subtle part of our body gives out commands to more robust parts of the body. In the same way, we could say that the food that we consume every day is on a mental plane, on an emotional plane, and then on a physical plane. So also the air that we breathe. I mean, here in Athens, the air is not so good. So the first intake for the human being to live is air, actually, right? And then water, and then physical food. And if the more subtle food on the mental and emotional plane is not healthy, if I'm thinking negatively, if I'm having bad emotions, and I dwell for too much of a time in those, then it will affect my diet, my body, my physique, my mental and my healthy state overall. So this is the approach that we don't just say it's important to eat biological stuff. You cannot, the way you eat it, how you eat it, with whom you eat it. We tend to eat in presence, so that there's not too much talking going on. And if someone talks, we always try to have one center. Because if many people talk at the same time, it's very chaotic and there's no center in the room. And then this chaos is being transferred again to the plate, to the food.
So describe me a day of yours.
So a simple start of the day is the difference to a small family, let's say, is that you get 40-50 calimeras every day. You get a good morning from so many people, right? This is a big difference for me, because in a city, for example, or even in a village, you might not know your neighbors, so there it's much more connected. And each and every one of us, since we all work together and we're all day together, we know each other like upside down. So we wake up early, let's say 7 o'clock, we go to work, work in the fields until 9:30, then we have breakfast until 10, then we continue to work in the fields. For those guys who have some organizational and managerial responsibilities, they then have, let's say, a deep work phase where they focus on project work in teams of 2 people or 3 people, or even by themselves, to really blend out all distractions. Then around midday we have a snack, and after midday we try to put some meetings into the day. Some work meetings, some project meetings, decision meetings, strategy meetings. And then you might go again back into the field and work outside. And we have at 6 o'clock dinner time, where everybody is invited to join the dinner. Because we have seen that when people eat together, they are somehow bond together. You exchange ideas, opinions, how was your day. It's like in a small family. When the kid comes home from school and the mama asks, how was your day at school, right? This is still a very basic level of social connection with everybody. And then at nighttime, we might have a group meditation or some other things. Maybe not everybody involved in some meditational activities. And then we go to bed.
Excellent.
Yeah, sometimes, one time per week, we have a general assembly meeting where each and every team leader presents some of his projects and maybe some of his thresholds and difficulties, and where he needs to get help on. The board of directors presents some of the financial stats.
It sounds like a big family of 60 people.
Yes.
Any leisure activities during...
We also do some sports activities at night. Others go dance tango in Corinth. Others do some other sports. But I also felt that working for, let's say, 3 to 4 hours a day outside, you have your natural fitness. Because I was studying and doing actually a fitness method where you're out in nature, you lift your own body weight and with tree trunks, with stones. And this happened now to turn into my regular lifestyle. Like, if you work in the fields, you kneel, you side bend, you carry, you lift. So you have a basic fitness incorporated in your daily rhythm already.
But you don't live there permanently. You go back and forth between Athens and Nemea.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. But mostly I live there, but like over the weekend...
Why not? Why don't you live on a permanent basis there?
Well, it has to do also with the building rights and licenses. So this takes naturally a process to go through the normal process of bureaucracy in Greece. So until that is being solved, we are urged to be on that non-permanent basis, let's say.
Why did you decide to do this open day today?
We also have an open day in Nemea, and we do a show around. They can, if they really like it, they can come again and try to work a little bit on in the fields, in contact with nature. And if they really do think, and also we think, that they are fit, they present themselves in front of the General Assembly meeting.
How do you judge whether they're fit or not fit? That's very interesting.
Well, I think if the person is inspired by this lifestyle, it shows directly from the first minute, right? So there's no hard cut criteria. If you have this and this hair, no, you cannot be, right?
Okay. No tough interviews about, you know, sustainability and difficult questions, etc.
There's no interview type, but it is, of course, we have certain rules, how we operate the community, how decisions are being made, that we respect one another, that we don't use phones in the dining room, for example, in the dining hall, in order to lower the radiation, at least during food. And yeah, it's quite a natural process, and people then are invited to stay for a period of, let's say, first 3 weeks, 6 weeks, see how it goes. If they really continue to like it, then they can stay for 3 months, 6 months, and then we discuss if they become, for example, a more permanent member of the team. Otherwise, he's also invited to join the collectivity, the non-profit organization, as a normal member, and come over the weekends for some seminars and activities, and live still in Athens or wherever he lives.
How do you get financed? Do the members finance the community?
Through member fees and donations mostly.
Okay, so there's every member that comes into the community has to give a member fee. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
For monthly activities, and also for the right to vote.
Mm-hmm. How much is that? Is that expensive? Is that
what's the price?
What
now?
Is it like?
It's 70 euros now.
70 euros a month.
Yes.
For the person to be able to live, even if it's on a weekend or on a permanent basis.
No, these 70 euros are strictly for the member. For being a member of the non-profit organization to partake in the activities, and if he comes on the land and provides his help, then he also pays something for, or he contributes to the food contribution costs.
Mm-hmm. If someone doesn't have a source of income, for example, mm-hmm. and decides to shift their life, leave the city life. Okay, and come to your community, but they don't have any other means of, financing.
Good question.
How do you go about with that person, or with more people, I understand, because the point of these people is actually to change their lifestyle.
Yes.
But they can't afford it, so...
It has always been our policy that the money shall never be an obstacle in order to come and live with us, given the fact that we can financially support 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 persons who don't contribute financially. So we say symbolically it's good to contribute, and also in essence, because there's also the financial expenses, but it should never be a hindrance, it should never be an obstacle. If someone is really inspired and putting all his love and affection and inspiration into this common collective work, then he's more than invited to join.
What if that person actually works very hard in the fields every day? Is this actually paid off financially? What I mean is, like, if someone contributes with their labor, mm-hmm. does this actually translate it into sort of a financial contribution towards the community and gets away with not getting paid? Because if not, then if you can contribute for 4 or 5 people, but let's say the rest 55... need actually to have a certain financial backup to be able to live in the community.
Most of
us, that can be sometimes an issue, right? So I guess one needs to have sort of a financial background to be able to live in this community.
Yes, like most of us have part-time jobs or online with the help of remote working. I mean, I also work still for my companies in Germany. And some people go for summer season, touristic season. In Greece to go work and collect all the money for all the year, and that allows them then during the winter time to stay.
So feasibly wouldn't be possible for those 50, 60 people to actually live on a permanent basis, because they would have to go out of the premises to make a living and then come back again. Is that right?
Yes, it is right up to now. We are looking forward to found also companies that we collectively produce our own sources of income apart from donations and member fees. And this is, however, a process that is in the making, because most of the people don't have a business background. There are some, let's say, people who have studied business, economics, but or some other people have some craftsmanship or whatever. But you still need to have a professional work environment in order to really set up a company which has running expenses and all that stuff. So right now we're still on a person-based basis, where each and every one of us is invited. If one cell of the body is healthy, the rest of the organ and the whole body is also healthy. So each and one of us is invited to be independent by himself in order to stand as a single part, as a single unit in the whole.
But if not, they have to leave, right?
It's up to them. I mean, if they don't have any source of income, brothers and sisters also help them financially in times of need, to go to a doctor or to buy some elementary stuff. And at some point in time, yes, this person might leave for some months and come back again.
Mm-hmm. Have you had people who actually were dissatisfied and left for good, and for what reasons?
Well, if you set up a thing like this, you are going to be polarizing. If you're not polarizing, and if you're trying to make happy everyone, then you make happy no one. People do get upset if, for example, we reflect them back some negative behavior and they take it in an egoistic manner. However, the field of love is so strong that, and of mutual understanding, that it really takes a long time until someone really says, I'm fed up, I don't see any way out, and I need to leave. I cannot cope with you guys anymore. Then we have really exploited all the different possibilities to make that person be in harmony, first of all with himself and with the rest of us. And if so, maybe a distancing could be also a healthy distance. So we had a very beloved guy from Italy who took a distance, and now he comes to visit us again. But he's not yet allowed to be a part of the crew again on a full-time basis.
Do you give yourself some time to listen to that person, to that one person who might have left for some reasons, and sort of re-examine the whole structure?
That's the first thing that we say to every newcomer, that if someone comes with a fresh eye and sees all the installations, all the processes, the way we work, and he has feedback, and he should be very doubtful. He should doubt everything in the beginning and question everything. This, we feel, is a very healthy way of doubt. If life proves for himself and for us that certain things work, and since 2006 it has been a growing endeavor, and people are starting to get more and more healthy, happy and balanced with their own lives and as a collective, then I think that is a big, strong proof that it does work, and that people who don't or who are disappointed or dissatisfied with that what is happening, maybe that's only a temporary view on things.
But if that same person questions you in, let's say, 4 or 5 years after he has been there, because he knows now how things go about, do you listen to that person, or do you say, no, we're going to do what, you know, the board of directors has decided, and that's it?
No, everyone has the right to speak up in the General Assembly meeting, and everyone should come with facts and with proof, and also with other testimonials. And if he can really back up his opinion, we need to listen.
Finally, last but not least, so what is the key to a healthy and happy community, in your opinion?
I believe it's the so-called trapezia, the table talks that we do. When things pop up, we try to solve them on the same day, so that we don't go to bed with a grunty feeling in the belly and a bad emotion or thought about another person and trying to solve it on an eye-to-eye level. If that doesn't work, then on the team that we both work in. If that doesn't work, then in front of the whole assembly. And this has very much saved our lives. Because no things are being turned under the carpet, as in so many other collectivities or families or even societies.
It's a family, isn't it?
It's like a big family, yes. But it's a family that you choose. In a physical family, you're born into a setup, right? And most of the times, you don't select your parents or your siblings. They happen to be your physical family. And this family is a family of like-minded people who are inspired by a common vision to make themselves a better person and to be a proof, a blueprint of society, of a new society, based on values and virtues in order to live a harmonious life.
Like Mark Hafferman said, the success to a harmonious life in an eco-community is some form of democratic agreement among people who share common values and principles. A traditional village, for example, does not share resources more or less equally. It also does not provide for common spaces for all, including women and sometimes children, to be together without being saddled with traditional role patterns. On the other hand, many who join an eco-society have already lived in a town or city and are aware of the shortcomings that make life difficult in urban centres with daily commuting, traffic jams and air and water pollution. There is also the lack of a sense of community which makes them feel alienated and yearn for an alternative lifestyle. Aiferon is only one case study of this alternative way of life, but there are others too, with many young people who yearn to create an equal society with greater solidarity and social cohesion to make it worthwhile to pursue aims. The return to nature is the return to oneself. It is a difficult journey, but one very much worthwhile. Veganism is upon us, with thousands of people around the world giving up animal products. The movement, which encourages people to follow a vegan lifestyle, has grown rapidly. Of course, veganism and vegetarianism originated long before westernized veganism became popular. Vegetarianism was practiced as early as the 5th century BC in India, and it is strongly linked with a number of religious traditions worldwide, such as Hinduism, Jainism, Buddhism, and Sikhism. And tofu, a well-recognized alternative to meat, originated in China over 2,000 years ago. When it comes to vegetarianism and veganism, the basic principles are similar. Both involve eating plant-based food for environmental, ethical, health, or religious reasons. But while vegetarians mainly just exclude meat, vegans follow a much more restrictive diet, excluding all animal products, as well as any animal-derived foods such as milk, eggs, and honey. There are several benefits attributed to a vegan diet as long as it is carried out properly. It can help people lose weight, and as with the vegetarian diet, has been linked with a reduced risk of heart disease and certain cancers such as colon and breast cancer. A recent study looking at the effects of a vegan diet in people with or at risk of developing type 2 diabetes found that a plant-based diet may help to control blood glucose levels. On the flip side, becoming a vegan does not automatically guarantee good health. You could, for example, eat chips for every meal, and while you would qualify as a vegan, you wouldn't necessarily be doing your body any favours. Along with the growth in veganism has come an increase in vegan-friendly meals, and these have additional salt, sugar and fat to improve their taste. Processed foods commonly include trans fats and emulsifiers which can harm beneficial gut bacteria. There's also an association between veganism and lower bone density, which can lead to an increased risk of fractures. If you did want to change what you're eating but don't want to go the vegan way, the Mediterranean diet is classed as one of the healthiest in the world. Think lots of vegetables, fruit, beans, lentils, nuts, olive oil, whole wheat bread, brown rice and fish. This diet does not eliminate meat, but limits the intake. Esko Essence is a plant-based health food consultant and chef who came from Finland to Greece and successfully married the Mediterranean diet with plant-based healthy food. He will go out choosing his own seeds to plant his own fruit and vegetables and would carefully pick all the ingredients that make a Mediterranean vegan diet a healthy one. I met him in central Athens before he went out to buy new seeds and began by asking him how his food habits changed from when he was growing up into a family of farmers in Finland to moving to Greece and becoming a vegan.
Really, those days, early days of my life, you know, I was eating everything like everyone else. I was not aware yet these options that we have to create a better health in life. You know, that was the traditional way of life, you know, still in those years in Finland. You know, the new age of the industrial revolution had not yet breaked through as today. So, you know, like it was the early days and we still had the tradition alive. So we maintained the animals on the farm. You need to grow the food for the animals to be able to be happy also. Mm-hmm. And this way have like more sustainable way of eating and farming. For me, that time, it was the like natural thing to do. It was part of the culture. So after that, things started shifting. My perspective became different because when I entered to the industrial revolutionized supermarkets and shops that provide all kind of products and without not so much the conscious aspect of it, the right information to know what kind of foods they are, where they come from, and it's all packaged and processed and different ways done. So it's easy to pick it up from the shelves, basically.
Mm-hmm. But when you came to Greece, something shifted in you. Mm-hmm. What was that you saw that made you actually realize that, okay, enough with meat, I just want to be a vegetarian or vegan from now on?
Well, it all happened very quickly, like entering the Laiki, the Greek farmers market, where I saw people like having the products from their farms and gathering and offering their products. And also I met important people in my life, you know, that were more experienced than me. They taught me some of the ancient Greek, like Hippocratic methods and philosophy and this type of knowledge and understanding of nature and the forces of nature, how these are like in harmony by themselves. And this was so important that it kind of opened my eyes and I started seeing everything in nature more clearly and as it is.
The Greek Easter, right?
Yes, of course. I had to skip that last 20 years, but you know, I saw it with my eyes open that, you know, what's the tradition? And it's great, I respect, you know, but it's own personal choice then in the end to choose what you want to eat. It's a choice. Mm-hmm.
So how do you prepare a meal?
Well, it's just when you look at the season out there, you see what kind of weather it is. So you can see already it's spring, it's summer, it's autumn, it's winter. So we have different vegetables that are available. So by shifting the food into plant-based food and eating more raw vegetables and fruits, sometimes a little bit cooked lightly, as minimum as possible, so you can maintain the nutrients inside, like steaming or just baking or quickly sautéing, like poaching in the water, you know. You can maintain the nutrients in the foods, and then when you eat them, your body can absorb them. So most of us are like nutrient deficient on a daily basis. We eat like processed foods that come from the fast food chain with processed flours and fats and sugars and ingredients and all of them that are really unhealthy. Our body don't understand that kind of information. Mm-hmm. And when we go back to the pharmacy of nature, which is the farm, that's where all the nutrients are cultivated and grown naturally. And those are the keys to the genes we have that turn on our own internal processes that detoxify the body, start regenerating the cells, and you become more alive, more who you are already, you know, really. Mm-hmm. You just have to take the care of the shopping, go to the farmer's market, meet the farmers, get the fresh ingredients, and learn the basics of cooking, which is so simple. You just need to nicely chop them, wash them well, chop them well in the mouth-sized pieces so you can eat the vegetables, put them together, one of each. I use always like flavors, like I call them the taste, the elements of, you know, the all that experience we have while we eat. Because in the mouth is the first place. It's the stomach. It's the before the stomach in Greek, which is the mouth where we masticate and pre-digest the food. So the enzymes, example, in our inside cheeks, inside there's glands that produce saline liquid that mixes with carbohydrates, which has amylase, which is the digestive enzyme to some thousands of years since we cultivate the grains to digest the carbohydrates and the sugars. So we have shifted, you know, a long time to that type of diet, rice, potato, different grains and all this. So all this is a part of the process, and while eating like this and properly pre-digesting the food, when it enters our digestive system, it's broken totally into this kind of liquid that it can go into our small intestine to be absorbed, the nutrients.
Describe your meal you enjoy cooking and the ingredients you use in that meal.
My favorites are like smoothies in the morning that are like fresh mangoes or papayas from Crete or nice bananas from Crete together with the nuts that I have soaked them overnight that are alive, because we remove the enzyme inhibitors from the skin of the nuts by soaking them for 8 hours minimum. And then we eat them and they are super alive. So I get all the protein from the nuts, some healthy oils like walnuts, which look like our brain, example. They make us feel super concentrated. It has this amino acid tryptophan that it's a prerequisite for our serotonin, which is our neurotransmitter for feeling good and happy and everything. And this also helps in the sleep rhythms, because it brings that into melatonin later on. You sleep better at night by eating walnuts. Mm-hmm. So walnuts, bananas, maybe some melassa, which is...
And warm dishes?
Warm dishes. I love making pasta, but the whole grain or gluten-free or noodles, and make like a Thai-style sauce with sautéing a little bit in coconut oil, which has higher resistance for temperatures, the coconut oil. So it's better than olive oil, example, for cooking.
Any protein-based foods?
Protein-based foods. Protein is, you know, this myth that everybody talks about all the time. Where you get the protein from and like all that search for the lost proteins or something. But that's not really the case, you know. Proteins are everywhere. Basically, they are made from amino acids. And those amino acids are the building blocks for the proteins. So you get a lot of amino acids from different foods. And those amino acids are stored in your body when you absorb them. And your body is creating your own proteins. Collagen from your skin every 3 weeks is a new skin you have. So all your cells in your body are regenerated when these activities are happening. There is like more protein matter. Those amino acids I mentioned earlier. Or there is more in like some nuts, almonds example, which are alkalizing. And they have a lot of amino acids in them. Sunflower seeds, hemp seeds, there's many different seeds. So if you have a variety of these, they are much more easier broken down in your body and absorbed. You know, meat is not the best source delivery. And as you mentioned, that people who do athletics and are counting the proteins and the calories and everything, you know, they use mostly, you know, like these concentrate powders in their smoothies to bring up the protein profile higher because they want to build muscle. Like you need to have like a 2-3 grams per your kilogram protein per day. So if I'm 100 kilos, let's say, I need to have 200-300 grams of protein per day to have more in order to be able to...
What do you say about that?
I think they are in the same category with, like, processed foods. It's something that they do, like, you know, in factories or laboratories or something, and they process them in order to be like that. It's a quite expensive and difficult way to work your way through. Okay, you can try if it works for you, but I would suggest better to go to the nature's pharmacy to get the real stuff. The origins of these things are in nature everywhere. It's like brown rice bran, which is like 70 antioxidants, and it's really rich in those nutrients. I'm talking about the phytonutrients. They are the ones that are the keys to this, you know, unlocking your own infinite possibilities to create your reality and regenerate your body. And at the same time, your mind and your all your being becomes more alive and more harmonized and more when you're nutritiously fulfilled. If you're craving for things all the time, that I'm hungry again, I need some sugar, I need some pies, I don't know what. So all these are just signs that your body is crying literally that, you know, hey, you're not feeding me like well, you know, like you're not giving me the foods that I make me nutritiously happy. Try eating some raw vegetables and you will see that the hunger is long gone before you have even had the chance to digest it.
It's very difficult nowadays to find fruit which doesn't have a lot of, you know, chemicals on it. So that's also a debate there, isn't it?
It's a debate, yeah. And you can look at it in that way, that depending on the location where you are, like how is the seasonality there? What is available? Like Greece or Finland, example, they have the same time, but very different availability of vegetables and fruit. So many vegetables and fruits are grown in the south and transported there. So anything that's transported usually is somehow preserved, that it doesn't go bad on the way. So they use probably some techniques that will prevent them from going bad, and that's usually a sign that, you know, you should look a little bit carefully, is it okay to eat that? I use like vinegar or, you know, soda or salts, you know, things like that that like attract the similar, if there's chemicals which are made from minerals that are from nature or chemically done, you know, it helps to get them stuck and kind of dilute away. So it's the washing everything, but it's better to look for something seasonal near you.
Are you 100% against eating meat? I mean, taking aside the ethical side of it, okay, which is a very important aspect, but would you eat meat even under certain circumstances, like, for example, in kosher?
If I would be invited into the tribe and share the experience and the ceremony with them, you know, how they share it, I would participate. I would not become greedy, probably eating more, but I would offer myself, you know, as part of the ritual to be part of it. And I could try a little bit if it would be in this content, but I wouldn't do it in the, you know, just in whatever. If grandmother or somebody, you know, maybe I've been hungry for days, I don't know. There's a lot of chances that I might for my survival or for my instincts, you know, to, if I'm in such a rural Eskimo neighborhood and lost and can't find my way home, I would, you know, probably do it, you know. I find it's survival instinctual thing, you know. But if you want to grow in a conscious way, you know, in this life and become more aware of the other sentient beings and the compassion, you know, in between, in our relationships, in our everyday life, you know, to become more sensitive a little bit. Meat has certain qualities that, you know, doesn't allow us so easily to become conscious and aware. It kind of creates some type of like blindness a little bit about the reality when we are not aware of the pain and suffering caused onto those beings before we eat them. They are not really showing or informing us anyhow how they do it. And then the time comes, we eat it. So we are taking in all those energies, what has been participated in the whole process where the animal is grown in nature or in some super artificial farm in conditions very low quality.
So you think if an animal is tortured or is actually slaughtered in a certain way, we basically eat the fear and all the anxiety of that animal?
Yes, it's like what's stored there, basically. Our body and the animal's body, it's like the memory. It's the storage of the experiences we have had during our lifetime. So it's all the trauma and all that, you know, it kind of stored in our body. So I have a strong feeling that it has like an effect how we feel after. You know, maybe we are not aware of it, but I think it has an effect. And it shows in the numbers, like if you do look at the statistics of the health of different countries and nations, like if you do look countries like where they've done the China study or other places where they study like a big population of vegetarian diets, you know, near the cities and in the rural areas. In the cities, most often there's a lot of degenerative diseases, and in the rural areas where they don't consume a lot of meat and these products which are processed, you know, they have very low rating cancer and different degenerative diseases.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends who say, okay, I take my proteins from beans and peas and nuts. But when it comes to carbohydrates, a lot of my friends who are vegans, they have a hard time trying to lose weight. How can you make sure that you keep the carbohydrates and, you know, keep someone full in their stomach by also keeping the calories low when you're cooking?
Yeah, when it comes to carbohydrates, you know, usually we go directly to the complex carbohydrates, which means that, you know, they are complex in such a way that they are not processed.
For example?
Like brown rice with nice vegetarian sauce is wonderful meal. And, you know, you can also rice and combine with a little bit some beans maybe. And you have all the amino acids your body needs, which are approximately like 10, 12, you know, we are now, which are the amino acids that our body is not able to produce by itself. So it has to eat them, you know, from the food we eat. It means like you need to have sometime brown rice and sometime lentils or sometime together. Like
why it, together though?
Because it has all the amino acids. The ones I spoke before, I don't remember all the names of them now. Like there's 12 amino acids that your body can't make itself. So it gets them from beans, from rice, from seeds, from nuts. Your body stores those amino acids inside the storehouses in your body, in the cells, and then uses them, you know, when it's building up in the small little factories there, building the type of cells that, you know, need this type of proteins, like different for the skin cells, different for the organs, brain, lungs, heart, eyes, nails, hair. It's all like functioning continuously there. So our body is incredible. But if we keep eating processed food with a lot of saturated animal fats and proteins, like on daily basis, this will create a certain type of acidosis, like a condition which is inside our body, the pH, the potential hydrogen measured, you know, in our blood, it's usually 7.4. Somewhere there, it's in equilibrium. So it's a little bit alkaline because 7 is neutral, 0 is full acid, and high is alkaline.
And what does this mean in terms of diseases?
It means that, you know, when the conditions become very acid, like kind of toxic a little bit from the foods that we can't digest or alcohol, cigarette, coffee, overdoing all that, and proteins from animal foods, like they are all acid forming, so the pH go down in our body and creates an environment where easily first begins some type of inflammation, often, you know, maybe some pain in the joints, you know, arthritis, osteopenia, osteoporosis. In content, if we would have more plant-based diet and more detoxifying type of eating habits, our body would do naturally the detox daily and keep the place and the environment more balanced, more calm, rich in nutrients from the foods like salads, vegetables, fruits, you know, sprouts, microgreens, wild herbs, you know, like berries in season, all these beautiful colors. And these are the nutrients you're looking for. If you go to the farmer's market, I mean, my eyes are popping out when I see them. I really, really want to like dive in there and have like, I wish I would have my own farm and I could grow all that too, you know.
Tell me something. When you are preparing a nice, warm, plant-based dish, do you take into consideration of combining those different elements of each food in order to prepare that meal? And Give me an example of that.
Well, like my whole science, like it's free for everyone because it's totally natural. It's the essence of these things. So it's the taste. So we have the sweet, we have the salty, we have the sour, we have the bitter. And these are the main four flavors where we begin with. This is easy task for anyone to, like, you know, salt is the sea salt, not the processed salt you get, like, you know, it's natural sea salt. That's what we're looking for. And then that gives the salty flavor. Sour, where do we find it? In the Espiroidea, like all these lemons, limes, oranges, all of them are sour. So we get sour flavor. Then we want to use a little bit sweet inside there to balance the sweet and sour and the salt. So we would put like either melasa or dates or raisins. You can soak them a little bit in the water. They become a little bit softer and the blender makes wonders. Like, and then you can use, if you're into honey, you could use a little bit of honey. I wouldn't cook honey because it becomes toxic after. It's not first on my list. Sometimes I use now like a new, which is in Greece, like a crepe syrup. It's a clear syrup from grapes. Mm-hmm. And I left the agave a little bit on the backside. But mainly it's coconut sugar. It's the some really good sweeteners like that, or just like dehydrated. The idea is like whatever I make, either sweet or salty or this, I always look at like salt, sweet, sour and bitter. You know, like what I do usually, I begin like by putting in my ceramic pan, let's say, some coconut oil. I started with to bring it into heat. I have chopped already my onions into small diced pieces. I chop my ginger if I like some for the pungent flavor to add inside, or garlic maybe sometimes. So I saute it in the oil just a little bit, and I add the spices, because the spices, either if I use like coriander or cumin or these kind of spices, I would first warm them up on a pan, and then I would grind them in the mortar or in the small grinder into powder and add into the oil to activate all the flavors. And then I would add inside, you know, the vegetables that I want to put. And I slowly stir fry quickly a little bit in the oil, everything. And then I add the gravy, which I make from like nut milks or coconut creams or maybe tomatoes, depending if I go red or if I go white, depending the color, the feeling of the day. And then I start cooking it slowly. I add some sea salt and, you know, I put something sweet a little bit, maybe coconut sugar, one little tiny bit, into savory foods, just a little bit sweet, and into sweets, just a little bit salt. So you are always trying to balance everything, to bring them into some kind of like a musical experience almost. That is like listening to the beautiful orchestra playing. All the instruments are there in harmony, and it's like a musical notes. It's how much sweet is there? How much salt is this? And the bitterness, how much herbs can you put? A little bit thruby from the Greek islands, or oregano, which are wonderful, full of etheric oils and bioflavonoids and terpenes and all these elements that now science is discovering, these hundreds of phytonutrients that activate our genes and make us alive. So we are really living in this harmonious relationship with nature that produce. We are breathing the oxygen the trees are exhaling. And, you know, it's this relationship we have. So every day we wake up to, you know, live another story.
I understand some of your cuisine will be influenced by the Japanese cuisine. Is that right?
Yes, it's already on the way. I really like these flavors like umami, which is like really sweet, tangy, sour, ferment flavors, you know, from soybeans or something like miso pastes. And they have really rich ingredient kind of way to use them. But it's very simple. It's just like, I don't agree everything because it's their culture. They use certain type like rice vinegars and this. I'm more into apple cider vinegar, which is more light for my type of stomach. So some people maybe handle the rice vinegar easier. I don't know. But I'm really like, you know, passionate about it. And I really like the simplicity. All the tradition and the way we eat, like with chopsticks, in small bowls, in nice portions, with big respect to each other when we eat in silence. And it's really about awareness and becoming more spiritual in your own life. And these experiences are the ones that create like the platform or the base, you know, for your own growth and cultivation of your character, you know, really calm, peaceful, in a compassionate manner. So I think...
We are what we eat.
Exactly. I think some wise people said that once. Really true. I mean, it's more like we are what we absorb from the food we eat, because not all the food is absorbable, or if it's called even food anymore, then. Mm-hmm. So I have to be a little bit aware of those choices we make.
As Esko Essence well said, indeed, everyone needs to understand what they are eating to ensure a balanced intake with the correct quantities of protein, carbohydrates, fats, vitamins, and minerals. Ultimately, veganism is a lifestyle rather than just a diet, so changing to a vegan way of eating requires long-term commitment and planning. It has to be carefully looked into and carried out in an educated way to ensure you're getting all the nutrients needed to maintain a healthy life. I'm Katerina Badzaki. Join us next week for another dive into the infinite space of our curiosity in another of our Infinite Curious programs. Meanwhile, aim to think before you eat, and eat in balance with your body and your inner nature.